From the Lynn DeGrant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 22nd day of November 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And Eric Snodgrass of Conduit Ag at Conduit.ag online will join us to discuss the weather forecast along the way. I'll tell you about the upcoming, if you haven't already registered for these, please do. Farm Assets and Illinois Farm Economic Summit conferences in the month of December, and will take up H5N1 and biosecurity on pork farms.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn for the day settled at 425.5, a penny and a quarter lower. The March down one at 435.25. May at 442.5, three quarters lower. January beans up 5.75 at 983.5. The March at 992.5, 7 cents higher. And soft red winter wheat at 544.25, down 4.5 cents today. Mike Zuzlo, GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas now joins us. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us today. It got cold here. Did you get cold and gray too?
We got very cold. It's been very sunny here, though, so that's taken away some of it. But we've lost power several times this week from sustained winds of 50 to 60 miles an hour. And it's just, I've never lived through something like this before, Todd. It's like, it's just crazy windy. It's finally died down with the newest cold front, but it has been a real strange week in terms of the weather pattern.
Strange week in terms of the weather pattern. Not a particularly inviting week if you're looking at the marketplace. At least I don't think it has been. What'd you see this week?
I agree. I had assumed a lot more potential for geopolitical risk premium to continue to be added to the wheat market as we went into the weekend, because it's not uncommon to have something happen on a Saturday or Sunday now when it comes to Russia and Ukraine. And they have had such a busy week in terms of ramping up, unfortunately, the conflict with deadlier weapons and introducing this week for the first time in our lifetimes, as far as being adults, the real possibility of a nuclear tactical strike on the part of Russia by their policy shift. So I really thought that we would have a real good chance of the week coming in with finding some additional short covering. But what happened was, I think the U.S. increasing and slapping new sanctions on Russia this morning sent the dollar reeling to new highs, sent the ruble to its lowest level since March 2022, sent the euro to its lowest level since December 2022. And I think that just shut everything down as far as what could have happened due to the geopolitics.
Yeah, so let's talk about why that impacts the wheat market. How important is Russia as a player on the global stage as it is in the wheat export market series?
Yeah, number one wheat exporter in the world here is what we're talking about. And if you ask me and walked off the street and said what one thing would make a difference in the wheat market or what has held the wheat market back ever since the highs of 2021, 2022, it's been the weakening of the ruble and the fact that Russia's been able to sell at such a cheap amount against us. And these sanctions only build up that new East, new West type trading block mindset. And we saw a lot of that too with the China and Brazil between the APEC meeting and the G20 meeting. A lot of rhetoric this week on that front. And that really showed up in the back end beans. New crop November beans hitting new 4-year lows this week. And that bean corn ratio on the new crop going down to 2.3 and a little bit below, really starting to tell the farmer. Market's trying to tell them to plant a lot of corn next year.
Yeah, will that tell farmers in Brazil first to plant a lot of second crop corn if they can?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that may be part of the reason why we're doing this. Plus, we've got a question mark on Argentina's corn crop. We need one more really big rain to take away the drought. That's supposed to happen next week. So that's going to be probably the first thing on my list to watch, other than what happens with Russia and with Ukraine. But, you know, talking about Brazil, I think what we're looking at, you and I've talked about this on a recent conversation, commodity week where that Chunke Peru port, that mega port, is open. It's going to be full up and running by mid-January for the major Panamax cargoes. And we're already losing business to Brazil on soybeans. We'll probably lose even more depending on where we go on the trade policy and where we go on the exchange rates. The Brazilian real is another loser today. That's another factor, that earlier question you asked. When we see these sanctions get slapped on, more often than not, we see the emerging market currencies, Mexico, China, Brazil, go down with the Russian ruble.
Where is that port located?
That's going to be Chancay, Peru. It's Chancay.
And so it'll be on the, what, I guess if it's in Peru, it'll be on the
Pacific.
Western side
of the
continent.
Pacific side. And China and Brazil and Peru are both working towards building some new highways and new train systems and railroad systems as well here in the next few years. So they're really in it to change the dynamic of the shipping. And China has really broken our Monroe Doctrine in that they've really put a lot of ports in Latin America since 2000, 2001.
Yeah, so they are simply building out a new infrastructure to supply themselves.
Yes, sir. And that goes with the new BRICS and that new East, new West mindset. And this, again, goes back to, I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm not saying the U.S. policy is wrong, but the offshoot of these sanctions and these tariffs and things like that really do stir the pot to the point where countries move in a longer-term mindset.
Yeah, does this give you concern about agriculture in the United States over the long run, over the next decade, the next two decades, as China, Russia, India, Brazil think about working more closely together, really consider what the trade might look like? And they do need a common currency. I'm afraid Bitcoin might look like that could be the case.
Yeah, I'm hoping that's not the case. You know, I'm doing a webinar, working on a webinar for the clients right now, and I would love to see another 1985 Plaza Accord where we break like we did with the Japanese yen. We broke the Japanese yen. All the central banks agreed at the Plaza Hotel in 1985 to break the yen, and I'd like to see that happen with the yuan and the Chinese and the U.S. work together in reorganizing the currency exchange rate system in the world for the benefit of everybody, really. So I'm hoping that's going to happen. I think there's a good chance of that, given if Lighthizer and Trump work together again in this new administration. I've been reading Lighthizer's book this year, and he talks a lot about that.
Yeah. So what's the name of that book? I need to put that on my list because I have not read it as well. I'll look it up. It should be. But
No Trade is Free, and it came out last year in 23.
Yeah, so that probably will be an important one. Robert Lighthizer playing an enormous role in the trade war of 2018-19 and the phase one, not the phase two, because it never was put into place, agreements under the Trump administration in his first term. It'll be interesting to see how those things turn out this time around and how quickly or if the Trump administration will use the tariffs it has promised in its campaign rhetoric. Now, what should farmers be thinking as they move into the holiday seasons? Thanksgiving is coming up next week.
Yeah, we just made a one-year high in the cash corn at the Gulf of Mexico at 519 on a daily basis, closing basis. We tried that again at 517 this past week, Todd. I think that's a key area to watch here. Can we get any more out of the cash corn? If not, we might be pushing on a string on the basis going higher. So making some short-term cash sales for cash flow needs might be a good idea. Do it a little bit early maybe this year, because I'm hearing from producer clients they're going to need cash sooner than the first of the year, probably more like December. I think to go back to your earlier question, to blend these two questions together, is we really do still have a 10-year low in corn and wheat supplies globally. So if we can get through without having the dollar go screaming higher the next few months, I think there's a better shot than 50-50. I'd put it at 75-25 that we can generate a wheat-led rally still, pull everything up with it.
On that happier note, I think we should end our conversation.
That sounds good to me. Have a great weekend.
You too. That's Mike Zuzlo. He is at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Have you picked up your tickets yet for the Farm Assets Conference, December the 13th at the iHotel here in Champaign, or the Illinois Farm Economic Summits, December 16, 17, and 18 in Mount Vernon, East Peoria, and DeKalb across the state? You can do so right now. Get yourself registered at willag.org, willag.org. I'll be traveling with the Farm Doc team, the Ag Economist, at all four of those events, the same presentations at all four from the Ag Economist, and at the Farm Assets Conference, the one that kicks it off here in Champaign. The crop scientist will join us. Many more as well. Eric Snodgrass will be there from Conduit Ag, and we'll have Matt Bennett too. So make sure that you visit willag.org, look at the agenda for the Farm Assets Conference or the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. They're kind of linked from one to the other in the registration pages, so you can see that and check out which one you'd like to attend. We hope to see you on one of those dates in December. Now up next, we'll talk about H5N1 and biosecurity for pork producers. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now here with Marisa Rotolo. She's the veterinary epidemiologist at the National Pork Board. Thank you for taking some time with me. Tell me what an epidemiologist does.
Yeah, so an epidemiologist simply studies diseases, and I'm particularly focused on diseases that affect animals, so I'm a veterinary epidemiologist. So looking at surveillance, prevention, control of any livestock diseases.
So today you want to talk about H5N1. I think about it that as the national flyways, and we have talked a lot sometimes about backyard chickens and poultry and the infectious diseases that can come from those migrating birds. Why are we talking about that in the pork industry?
So in March, H5N1, which is traditionally a virus that impacts the poultry industry, was detected in dairy cattle. And most recently, we did have a detection in a backyard operation in pigs in Oregon. These pigs were pet pigs and not intended for food consumption. This is also a different strain than what's currently circulating in the dairy industry. And, you know, influenza itself, not H5N1, is something that the swine industry has a lot of experience managing. And it's something that we want to be cognizant of so that we can be prepared and mitigate risk of transmission to our swine producers.
And so this is the issue that many will have heard about as it's related to the dairy industry and the jump from one species to the other, in this case to humans. There aren't very many people that have gotten sick, but some have. Usually it's a respiratory, it's an influenza issue. How do pork producers manage this in their barns?
The best thing that pork producers can do to manage or mitigate the risk of contracting H5N1 is to really focus on biosecurity, specifically biosecurity practices aimed at preventing interaction between birds, livestock, or any other species that may come in contact with your pigs, right? So you want to shut that down and make sure that pigs are only ever interacting with pigs. We've got some great resources on porkcheckoff.org. We have an influenza landing page that has a lot of good information specific to influenza and ways that you can prevent and manage influenza. In addition to that, we have securepork.org, which is an enhanced biosecurity plan that producers can go to and look at those resources and build up their biosecurity on their sites.
Why is it that pork producers need to be concerned if it's just in one set of animals that were backyard pets?
So we have seen that pigs may be susceptible to H5N1, and it's always good practice not only to prevent transmission of H5N1 into pigs, right, but also for all of our endemic diseases, PRRS, mycoplasma, PED. You want to practice high levels of biosecurity in order to mitigate that risk of transmission, not only for H5N1, but also our endemic pathogens.
Anything else I need to know about this before I let you go?
I would say take a look at securepork.org, securepork.org. Take a look at your secure pork supply plans. Work with your veterinarian to see if you've got any opportunities to improve your biosecurity.
Let's check the weather forecast now with Eric Snodgrass. He's at Conduit Ag. Hi, Eric. Thanks for being with us again. on this Friday.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. And by the way, Todd, pretty pumped about something Conduit is doing right now. We've got this awesome new promotion going on, 0% financing on input loans all the way through 2026. So I wanted to get that word out because that's pretty amazing what we've got going on. So everyone should try to check that out if they can.
Oh, yeah. So I always say Conduit Ag, but it is conduit.ag. That's instead of like Conduit Con. Or conduitag.com. It's conduit.ag. There's no .com on it. So go check that out. Something else I want to hear about, the bomb cyclone. Can you tell me about that thing?
You know, it's a term we've been using in meteorology since the 80s, but when the media got a hold of it, they just absolutely love it. And it's just this. When we find that there's a deep low pressure system that drops in its pressure at a rate of 1 millibar per hour over a 24-hour time period, we call that a bomb, a meteorological bomb. We had a storm system off the West Coast that doubled that rate. I've not seen one of those in a long time. And this was a monstrous storm system. In fact, if you looked at it from north to south, east to west, you could fit 12, I'm not joking, 12 Hurricane Helenes inside of it. And it's just hammered the West Coast, specifically Northern California. You're going, well, okay, what about us? Well, while all the action's been out there, we finally got things to our east, got a little snow out of it and some colder weather, but now we're looking at a bit of a drier pattern. And what we're setting ourselves up for going into Thanksgiving week is some really cold air in Canada that's going to start to unleash itself toward us. So yeah, that whole cyclone out there on the West Coast is actually critical to understanding our near-term temperature pattern here and the fact that we're now over a little bit drier after getting our first kind of round of some of the white stuff here in the last couple of days.
I know the fall had been warmer than normal. That made me get out my winter jacket with this cold, which I probably would not have out yet, but it sounds like I'm maybe going to need it.
I think you are. When you see some of the temperatures that are coming out of the snowpack that's living in Southern Canada over the next 15 days. I mean, we're looking at temperatures that might be 15 to 20 degrees colder than average. And at the end of November and the start of December, that's cold air. And we certainly didn't have this last year, right? I mean, we joked about it last year, not really having a winter. We had that 1 week in January where, you know, it got to minus 30 in central U.S. and the Kansas City Chiefs played the Dolphins. And like I joked about last time, we just wanted to know what coat Taylor Swift was going to wear to the football game. But like, that was it. That was all of last winter. We set records for heat last winter. And I do not think we're anywhere close to that this year. Quite a bit of strong evidence that would suggest that we have a more, what you would call normal Illinois winter, the days of old when we used to get cold, stay cold, and get some, you know, decent snow that sticks around for more than 48 hours. I think we're going to see a winter like that this year. And there's some good supporting evidence of it. And all that evidence for me, Todd, isn't La Nina. It's actually in the Bering Sea. The higher the pressure I can keep in the Bering Sea, the better our chances are of accessing that cold air. And that's what's going there right now.
Okay. So I know that Trent Ford, the National Weather Service, and Trent kind of made fun of this morning when he sent me a file about the weather. The National Weather Service said equal chances, warm, cold, I don't know, wet, dry for the month of December. You maybe have some more perspective on this as well?
Well, I that forecast can be misinterpreted, and it's why do they give you equal chances? They're saying that because they're looking for anything that can dominate the signal. So last year we didn't. Last year we're like, oh man, there's a big strong El Nino. We know exactly what to be expecting. This year it's different. The La Nina is so weak that the reality will likely be a highly variable weather pattern throughout much of this winter. And those are the kind of winters that become memorable. So we've got a lot to be watching here. And I it's nice. It's funny that they see equal chances, but that's really what they mean. Access to both cold and then big warm-ups and then just drop those temps again pretty fast. So there's going to be a pretty wild ride, I think, going forward over the next at least 6 weeks and beyond.
What's the South American weather forecast look like?
It is nothing but bearish news, to be honest with you. There looks to be plenty of rain in key areas and more rain on the way. I don't have it, and I really don't even see any heat stress in the near term. So they're getting a good wet spring. They caught up on planting, as you know, and most of the subseasonal forecasts for them all the way out through the beginning of January do not show major stresses. I'll watch Argentina closely for maybe some drought pressures creeping up on bigger acres, but even the dryness in southern Brazil is expected to be kind of undone here very soon. So apologize, but I don't have any sort of a bullish story out of South America right now.
Well, no need to apologize to me, but farmers are not going to be happy with you. Hey, Eric, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, you bet, Todd. Thanks.
Eric Snodgrass is with Conduit Ag. That's conduit.ag online. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. We're online on demand anytime you'd like. We're, of course, at willag.org, willag.org, or in your favorite podcast applications. Look for the Closing Market Report, Commodity Week 2, speaking of which, that's coming up next. You can hear the whole of that program if you can stay with us for the rest of the hour here on our home station. Many of these other radio stations will carry it over the weekend. And again, it's up online at willag.org right now. Commodity Week is next.